Support for this podcast comes from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative, connecting communities with the resources, infrastructure, and networks to ensure a vibrant local free press.
From KVPR in Fresno, this is Central Valley Daily. It's Wednesday, March 18th. I'm Elizabeth Arkalian. Thousands of schools in California have embraced a novel approach to teaching children. Proponents say the approach has removed barriers for student learning.
So, do they need food? Do they need glasses? Do they need therapy? Like, that is what the community school model or approach is.
Today, we'll learn more about the community school approach and why more schools could adopt the formula with proposed state funding. But first, these headlines. We are slowly getting reports about potential allegations that could come out about the late civil rights leader Cesar Chavez. This comes just days ahead of Cesar Chavez Day at the end of this month. KVPR's Crescencio Rodriguez Delgado has this report.
We don't know exactly what is being alleged against Cesar Chavez, but multiple events honoring him have been canceled in recent weeks. Now, the United Farm Workers, the union he co-founded, has halted all upcoming events. The UFW said it is aware of the claims against Chavez, and they are, quote, incompatible with our organization's values. Their statement alluded to allegations of child abuse. This is a major shock to communities who know Chavez's work. His movement to organize farm workers was born in the San Joaquin Valley. It inspired decades of activism for farm workers that is still active today. Chavez died in 1993 and was laid to rest in Kern County. His supporters have since fought to name schools and streets after him. In 2014, President Obama proclaimed March 31st, Cesar Chavez Day. For KVPR News, I'm Crescencio Rodriguez Delgado.
Meanwhile, hundreds of farm workers plan to rally outside a federal courthouse in downtown Fresno today. The United Farm Workers Union says members are coming together to oppose a new Trump rule that they say slashes farm worker wages and increases the number of guest workers. A hearing in a lawsuit against the administration's new rule is set for this afternoon inside the federal courthouse. Environmental groups are responding after the Trump administration moved to reopen oil drilling off the coast of Santa Barbara. This is being done under the Defense Production Act of 1950. The move seeks to address potential oil supply disruptions stemming from the current war in Iran. Brady Bradshaw is an oceans advocate with the Center for Biological Diversity. He said in a statement that the move to drill off the California coast is dangerous.
The saddest thing about this illegal move by the Trump administration is that it will do nothing for national security. But what it will do is put one of America's most beautiful coastlines at risk of another devastating oil spill.
The oil drilling site in federal waters is being managed by the Texas-based company Sable Offshore. Republican State Senator Shannon Grove is seeking answers about funds that are not accounted for from a nonprofit focused on children's literacy. Grove represents the Bakersfield region in the legislature. At a budget hearing this week, she grilled state librarian Greg Lucas about the Dolly Parton Imagination Library. She says more than $500,000 from the organization is not accounted for. The Senate is expecting an update on the funds by Thursday. A First Amendment organization is raising alarm over a proposed rule at the Fresno City Council. The council's trying to restrict registered sex offenders from its meetings. But news outlet GV Wire reports that the First Amendment Coalition says not so fast. The news outlet cited a legal expert who says the Brown Act prohibits government agencies from blocking the public from attending meetings.
KVPR keeps you informed and brings you ideas and information. Now it's time to join the movement to keep public radio central to our valley. We need donations from 300 new supporters by March 20th to help secure KVPR's service and shows like this one. Public radio is now 100% community supported, and your help has never been more important. Join the movement at kvpr.org/donate.
And now to our main story. We all know the saying, it takes a village to raise a child. And California is experimenting with putting that saying into practice, specifically at so-called community schools. Their approach is to support the whole child, not just teach them key subjects. That includes providing space for students to learn to manage their emotions. There may be resources for kids who need a haircut or food. There's mental health support. Right now, some schools in the state, including in our region, have funding designated for community schools. And Governor Gavin Newsom wants to expand this program, but he'll need legislative approval. Reporter LaSherica Thornton with our news partner EdSource visited a community school in the foothills, and she joined us at the KVPR studios to discuss what she saw and the odds that this model could expand.
Community schools, or the community school approach, they are going to address not just the academic needs of their students. They're not just going to challenge students academically. They're also going to address those other needs, so physical, social, emotional, mental health, to really support the whole child, so to speak. So, and by that I mean they're going to address and remove the barriers for students learning. So do they need food? Do they need glasses? Do they need therapy? Like, that is what the community school model or approach is. And also with the model, kind of what's tied into it is that the educators, the people in the schools, are going to work with families, and they're going to work with local organizations to figure out, number one, what are the needs of the students in this community, and how do we best support them and bring in, again, those families, those community organizations, and provide all of those things. So,
yeah, very comprehensive.
It is, absolutely.
Compared to, a regular public school. Mm-hmm. Do we have a sense of which specific student populations these types of schools are designed for, would serve?
Absolutely. So it is. So students with large numbers, large percentages of socioeconomically disadvantaged students, large numbers of English learners, the large numbers of foster and homeless youth. Actually, the way that California has been funding community schools over the last 4.5 years, they've actually prioritized funding to the ones with like 80% of that student population. So definitely it's meant to be for those high need school. But again, you don't have to be. Like, you can do these things in any capacity, so to speak. But I don't know. I kind of think about the saying of it takes a village to raise a child. Like, that's what this model is about. So.
Okay. And I could imagine, I know you visited a school in Korsgold, mm-hmm. where this is happening. So more rural communities, mm-hmm. maybe students in the foothills, mm-hmm. don't have as much access to
Absolutely.
Things that other students do.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, you recently reported on a funding debate over these community mm-hmm. schools. It's being debated whether the state should permanently fund these types of schools. How much is the legislature seeking to invest in community schools in California?
So, and that's the thing, it is a debate, right? Because you have Governor Newsom's proposal. It's kind of tied to the fact that he feels like this model, this approach, is worth a permanent investment. And so the proposal would be $1 billion annually, every year.
And to clarify, community schools have already been receiving state funding, but this proposal you've reported on would make that funding permanent.
Absolutely.
Per so, the governor's
request. So currently, more than $4.1 billion has been allocated over several years, and it is going to 25% of California schools, so about, over 2,500.
So if there are 2,500 community schools already mm-hmm. receiving the funding, mm-hmm. if this becomes permanent and mm-hmm. there's more money allocated mm-hmm. toward it, would the extra money allow more schools to experiment and open with this?
Yeah, so the funding is meant to kind of do two things. So it's meant to expand, meaning possibly 3,700 additional schools, but it's also meant to maintain what has been started in the 2,500 schools. So it's, okay. it's meant to do both. Yep.
And one thing I found interesting in your reporting is that the Legislative Analyst's Office, which is a nonpartisan office that gives recommendations essentially to the state based on the financial situation mm-hmm. or feasibility of things, mm-hmm. they were a little more cautious. They pushed for this funding to occur in grant cycles rather mm-hmm. than to be permanent. Tell mm-hmm. us a little bit about their perspective.
So their perspective, their recommendation aligns with what's currently going on. That
okay.
that kind of grant cycle is what has currently been the case. So there's been like different cohorts of community schools that have got the funding. They've had requirements. So reporting, implementation, reporting, planning. Like, that's what's been currently going on for the past 4.5 years. And that was supposed to be temporary. And also, the Legislative Analyst Office actually does not think $1 billion a year will even be enough for all of the schools that would be eligible. So,
okay. So they're a bit of more critical of the idea than the governor's advisor.
And not just them. I mean, technically, I spoke to educators. So I'm talking community school coordinators who are implementing this. I've talked to researchers, and they are even concerned over if $1 billion is enough to do both. You know, will this allow us to maintain and continue what we're doing and increase the number of schools doing it? So,
one interesting note in your piece about these schools is that educators saw student outcomes were actually a little more improved at community schools. What areas specifically did educators say that they saw improvements?
So, when we're talking educators, a lot of times I'm talking to teachers, I'm talking to the coordinators implementing these programs. They have a lot of the anecdotal impacts, all right? So, they see that the students are more engaged. They see students come into school more often. They don't see as many disciplinary issues, right? So those are a lot of the anecdotal impacts, but researchers have also pointed to the data backing that up, right? So they see reduced chronic absenteeism. They see suspensions lower. They also even see academic improvements or outcomes are usually take a while to kind of track, but the Learning Policy Institute is actually thinks that, you know, they're already seeing improvements for both English and math as well. So,
and I know for your reporting, you actually went to a community school in Coarse Gold, as we mentioned. What did you see there? What stood out to you?
Yeah. So, and I will note, like, this is a small, you know, mention where it's a, in a rural community, it's a small school. They are just kind of starting out with their funding and their implementation. So they are learning throughout this process. But got to go to their Zen Den.
Yeah.
So it's a quiet area, really meant for the students to be able to refocus or calm down. And so they go there 5 to 10 minutes. So it's this dimly lit room. They have different activities throughout. I'm pretty sure the kids don't realize, like, a lot of the activities, like, you know, the water gel beads, like stuff like that, like, helps with their sensory. There was even a mini trampoline. They were, you saw, you could jump on it to release energy. I couldn't get a picture of them doing it because they were just kind of, they would jump on there real quick and, you know, different types of chairs, comfortable bean bags, like pillows, like all this stuff. It's also, the Zen Den is also where the school counselor can even hold like small group sessions for things like girl empowerment, impulsive control with the boys, coping skills. So it's also a space for that as well.
LaSherica Thornton, education reporter with our news partner, EdSource. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
And that is today's show. Today's episode was produced by Jonathan Linden and KVPR with support from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative. I'm Elizabeth Arkalian. Find the latest local news anytime at kvpr.org.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.